Guess what?
What?
You're an author.
Oh my God, you're right.
You wrote a book.
I did write a book. And it's called Stop Blaming Mothers and Ignoring Fathers, How to Transform the Way We Keep Children Safe from Domestic Violence.
Right.
And it's available on
Amazon,
Kindle. It's soft cover. It's hardcover.
Yeah.
And it's a book that lays out six myths that really dive into these gaps in the field that the safety of the models is meant to fix or transform.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about gender double standards. It has interviews with practitioners
and interviews survivors.
And practical things you can do, but it really kind of is, it's good for anybody who knows the model or is new to the model. And I'm really excited about it. It only took 2.5 years to do.
Okay. Well, go get the book on Amazon.com. And we're back.
And we're back.
Here we are. Okay, wait.
Wait, what?
We are partnered with a survivor.
I am David Mandel.
Okay, let's not get weird here.
You are?
Yes, I'm Ruth Stearns Mandel, and I am the e-learning communications and strategic relationships manager.
And you are listening to a special mini-sode series on worker safety and well-being. How'd I do with that?
That was awesome.
Okay, which is 15 minutes or less.
Listen, we all grow and we all learn.
And my way of growing is using less words, I'm told.
But your words are powerful, so, you know.
Thank you.
Use them wisely. So we are here in Connecticut.
On Tunxus land.
On Tunxus land, which is part of the greater Algonquin Nation, a living culture and tribe.
Yeah.
And we are here on this sunny, beautiful, gorgeous Saturday day where the leaves are just shining in the sun.
It's really 0 degrees Celsius outside right now. Okay,
right.
Let's get to get a full picture of this.
So. Okay, and in reality, you're much more capable of sustaining that cold than me. So
I guess so.
You are.
I guess it's my Northern European.
All right, we have very little time.
Roots.
Sorry.
Yes, let's go right to it. So this is a series that where we're looking at the issue of the goal is to look at issues of worker safety and well-being as a critical aspect of domestic violence informed systems. And it's something that relates to worker safety, efficacy, relates to attrition, relates to performance. It works, relates to worker safety and mental health.
I'd actually like to point out that it also relates to liability.
Right.
For organizations and, you know, for their own best practices and so many other things behind the scenes.
And there'll be a few more episodes in this series, but this is a series for workers to validate and reflect their experience. And we hope for managers and executives and human resources to help them think about what do we need to do to make our agency more DV-informed. So today, the topic is when workers are targeted by the domestic violence perpetrator of one of their clients.
Oh. Okay.
Or it also includes that domestic violence perpetrator may be their client as well, if they're working with the whole family.
Right.
I know that when I did men's behavior change work, I was actually targeted by my clients. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but on more than one occasion and in one particular way, fairly seriously. But would while it's a really minuscule portion of my work history, it was definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
And
I do think that it needs to be said that when we talk about targeting, we're not just talking about violence.
Mm-hmm.
That's where every professional standards mind goes. So
I have a list.
You have a list.
That doesn't just include physical violence.
Which is the tip of the iceberg.
Which is the tip of the iceberg, right. So I'm just going to read, you know, the list and then we can circle back maybe. Or do you want me just
we'll
go
list.
One by one?
Yeah.
So the five things I have on my list today that aren't the totality of this, but just wanted to kind of get people thinking. Manipulation or intimidation during direct contact. So you're actually having direct contact with this person who has a history of perpetration.
Right.
And they are charming. They are bullying directly to you as a worker.
Mm-hmm.
And that can have both those things. The manipulation and the direct bullying can have impact.
Right. Or statements of, I'm going to call your professional, certifying, you know, body and complain.
That's the second one. Ooh, okay. You on the list, you okay. know, which is lawsuits, complaints, or threats of complaints, or threats of lawsuits to your supervisor, to your manager, to ombudsman's office, to professional boards, or to courts. Mm-hmm. Okay, so mm-hmm. that's the second big area. Mm-hmm. Implied or real threats against family members, including your kids.
Right.
Stalking online or in real life.
Right.
And then, you know, it's an element that's connected to all these things, really. But really looking at intersectionalities, that these things can all have different flavors and overtones or emphasis or direction if based on gender, based on, you know, race, that racism plays a part, you know, if you're a Black worker. Mm-hmm. And you're working with a perpetrator who's also a white supremacist, mm-hmm. that can be part of the threatening or intimidating overt or kind of implied
right.
behavior.
Right.
You know, you're targeted because you're gay. Intersectional
or
lens.
Or your authority is targeted because you're a Black woman.
Right.
Or your, right. you know, your professionalism right. is targeted because of, you know, whatever ethnic
right.
Gender factors.
So going back to the beginning, the manipulation or the bullying during direct contact, you know, I think that this is one of the most common ones. And I want to say about this is I know that when I did work back years ago with male and female probation officers who had domestic violence caseloads, that the female probation officers felt like they were much more targeted.
Right.
For both the manipulation and the bullying.
Right,
a real thing.
Right.
And I think that didn't actually mean that the male probation officers weren't being targeted for manipulation. They may have been just less savvy about it, is what I'm thinking about now. Mm. You know, that if you're less reflective
you're being targeted for
collusion.
But if you have power and privilege,
yep.
You know, and you feel secure in your own physicality, like you can defend yourself if somebody attacked you, you're probably not going to be as aware of the subtleties right. of that type of bullying.
And also, you know, I remember hearing a conversation related back to me where the male supervisor was saying, well, I could totally understand why you would act that way towards her. And so that, you
that's
know, that, yeah, so being pulled in. So then that's the little bit. We're just trying to give people a feel. These are Minnesotans and we want to raise the issue. Lawsuits, complaints, threats, or complaints of lawsuits. I can't tell you how prominent this is right. and how much it needs to be named.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem is this, that because we protect the right of litigants to bring forth complaints against professionals, and that's a necessary process for holding practice accountable and professionals accountable. That legitimate means is used as a tool, and we have to contextualize it to the violence. We can't separate it out and isolate it and
that's
say,
right.
oh, you have a right to bring this forth. What is the motivation in right. bringing it forth? What was the stated intent in bringing it forth? And most of the time it's to silence and to impede accountability for the perpetrator.
I have seen domestic violence perpetrators take their complaints and harassment attempts all the way up to chief executives in elected officials.
Right.
I've seen them take it all the way to the administrative heads of agencies.
Right.
And I have seen just that process, those efforts creating so much distress. I mean, I want to name the distress that creates, even if it doesn't materialize into and, you know, a kind of quote unquote real consequence.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Implied or real threats against family members. The classic one in my mind is when somebody says to you, oh, do you have kids? Mm. That there's really, you know, there's often the two messages. Well, you don't know anything about my issues if you don't have kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is sort of, you're already parsing if you're that person. You know, what are they going to do with this information?
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, or we had a case recently where somebody had a history of targeting the spouses, which mm-hmm. is just very insidious mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of the worker.
And there's been a little bit of professional resistance to looking at threats as part of the pattern of coercive control. And in fact, I have directly had a professional say to me, threats are not actions. But what threats do is they create an environment of fear where the perpetrator is trying to manipulate people into compliance and silence. And it is part of that pattern of behavior. And any threats should be logged and documented as part of that pattern towards multiple people so we can understand the danger that this perpetrator represents, not just to the family, but to professionals and the wider community as well.
Right. And I think it's one of the things that I'm very aware of. And when I train on this, I always tell people that one of the ways perpetrators have so much power is the way they wear people down and they create an exhausting environment. And part of that exhausting environment is that sense of unpredictability, potential threat. Is he going to fall through?
It's also the bother of having to deal with threats all the time.
That's right.
People fold really easily and really fast.
Right. And then stalking online or in real life. And this is, you know, the, you know, people coming up with information. It's very scary to show up to a meeting and somebody have information about you where you don't know where they got it from, how they learned it.
In
small towns,
looking at your Facebook page.
Right, exactly. Small towns or rural areas or people knowing people, you know, it's a real concern.
I was looking at your Facebook page and you have a nice looking family there. Well,
that's right, exactly. That stuff sounds very, and it's really hard to document that as a threat.
Right.
Is one of the challenges.
Right.
So, and that really we have to name that going back to my experience with probation, that women are going to be experiencing this differently, that if you're Black or you're from a marginalized group and you're a worker or professional, you may experience this differently.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to name that again. So what can agencies do about it? I'm going to just run through this.
You're going to run through the list.
This is Minnesota. And,
and just to let everybody know, we do intend on turning these into guidance for people. So that is coming.
First, agencies must widen out the concept of worker safety to include intimidation, manipulation, not just explicit threats of violence or actions of violence. So that's really basic that when we talk about worker safety, it can't be just physical violence.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is this kind of definition of worker safety must be a regular part and a preventative, not reactive part to supervision.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a case with a worker where there's domestic violence, discussion of safety, emotional and physical should be part of standard case
and
practice, not waiting till your worker comes back and says,
I'm in danger,
I'm scared. Staff at agency complaint lines or review boards should be educated around course control and pattern-based assessments. Is this complaint that's coming in
part of a pattern
of harassment and control towards the workers or towards family members or both combined?
Mm.
And then performance reviews and human resources need to be considering the impact of threats and intimidation on workers' performance.
Right.
You know, we can't claim to be a trauma-informed agency. We can't claim to be
a domestic abuse-informed
agency without looking at the well-being, the impact cumulative of working environments with violent offenders on people's performance, their well-being.
All right.
How did we do?
We got that out.
We did get that out. So this is a Minnesota. This is one in a series.
And you are?
I am David Mandel, Executive Director of the Safer Together Institute.
I didn't forget who you were.
Okay.
I really remember.
Okay.
And my name is Ruth Stearns Mandel, and I am the E-Learning Communications and Strategic Relationship Manager.
And check us out on safertogetherinstitute.com, academy.safertogetherinstitute.com, and all our social media platforms.
And we're out.